everyone. Welcome to the Feeling Lighter podcast by WeShape, where we are shedding old beliefs one episode at a time. Because the reality is, how you feel about yourself actually changes everything. And I am here with my fabulous co-host, Dr. Lisa Folden, and our guest co-host, Tyler, also co-founder of WeShape. Are you guys ready for this episode? This is a
Definitely. This is exciting.
A long time coming. I always try to tell our audience there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes and people's schedules, and this, we've been waiting for this guest. I fan out sometimes on episodes, and this is a fan out episode for me. So I'm going to let you introduce her, Lisa, and read her bio, and we're going to get right into it.
Absolutely. The Unbiased Science Podcast is hosted by Dr. Jessica Steyer and is devoted to objective, critical appraisal of available evidence on science and health-related topics relevant to listeners' daily lives. Dr. Steyer is a public health scientist with expertise in public health policy, biostatistics, and advanced analytics. Welcome, Dr. Jessica. How are you?
I'm doing well. Please call me Jess. Thank you so much for having me.
Will do. Absolutely.
Shout out to women in science.
Yes.
Like,
hell yeah.
I just want to say that. Like, I just love it. Like, female scientists are just love it. So welcome, Jess. We're so happy to have you. That's going to be hard for me. Whenever somebody has like a doctorate credential, I'm always like, I need to call you Dr. Steyer, because I feel like you have earned that. And I feel like so many women are like, oh, just call me. And I'm like, no, you've earned that. But I'll
go Dr. Jess if she feels comfortable with that.
Dr. Jess, yeah.
You can roll with that. And I totally get it, Katie. I actually struggle with that myself. It's like, right. You know, I have worked really hard, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm Jess, you know, but I totally get it.
You have earned that. So, but let's get right into it. I'm going to start with a question I'm sure you've heard a million times, so forgive me if this is going to be a boring answer for you, but I want to know, like, how can we really be unbiased? Like, isn't there bias in everything? So I want to start with that before I go into my questions. Like, how can we define what actually being unbiased is, and how can we actually know that that's even a possibility?
Great question. And yes, it is one I get asked a lot, because I had the great idea to name the podcast Unbiased Science. And right. And Katie, I think, you know, what you're saying is true. We're humans, and there's never a way to completely eliminate all bias. My goal with Unbiased Science is to present the best available evidence. Mm-hmm. That being said, yes, I'm still the medium, right? So it is still coming through my filter. I do my best to leave my own preconceived notions at the door. But, you know, I guess what I always call out when I get asked that question is, I guess people often think that there are two sides to topics. Right. And it's not so much that there are two sides. I mean, I think there are different questions that people ask, but the science, the scientific consensus presents the best available understanding of a topic at this point in time. So from that perspective, there really aren't multiple sides to an issue. I don't know if that really makes sense, but also, there are lots of different sources of bias, and in the context of science, there are all different definitions. There's recall bias, there's confirmation bias, selection bias, sampling bias, information bias. And the way that we design research studies is we do everything possible to minimize those sources of bias. And then that increases what's called the reliability and validity of our research and our ability to generalize beyond our study population, right? But that being said, there's no perfect way to do that. It's never ideal, but we do our best to minimize sources of bias.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm glad we've got that on the table, because I feel like that's really important for us to just even have a conversation about hot topics, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to dive into a hot topic. This has been on my mind a lot. I would love to know if we can have a discussion around supplements. Hmm. So I'm going to just have full disclosure.
Did you see your face?
Yes. I might have an idea of what's coming. Part of what I want to do on this podcast is not just have my own confirmation bias be confirmed. I do want to be, I want to have people poke and prod at my own beliefs. That's actually right. how I got here, because we used to have a body transformation company, and I thought that this particular diet and this particular exercise plan applied to everybody, and that's the way people were going to like live healthy, fulfilled lives. So it wasn't until I was able to poke at that belief, discover new information, new research, new science that allowed us to completely transform the company that we have and form WeShape. So I do believe in bringing people on who are going to poke at the way that I live and, and poke at my beliefs and bring the science in. So
poke away.
Tyler and I take a lot of supplements. We have been on supplement train for a long time. And in the last 6 months, every day when I take my supplements, I'm like, am I just putting money in the paper shredder, right? Like, is this even worth my time, energy, and resources? And I know that's a very generalized question, because you're probably going to say, well, what supplements do you take and what is the company and da da da, right? But I don't know where we can start with this, but I would like to talk about supplements. And there is a lot of hype right now in the marketing world around all the supplements you can take. It's more than ever. So I think it's also a relevant topic to discuss.
Absolutely. I have lots to say. I don't know if you want to, if there's a more specific question, otherwise I could just maybe start the conversation and then we can have an organic flow, but up to you completely.
Let's do that. Why don't you just start with your initial comments and then we'll let the conversation unfold.
So first and foremost, I want to just say that I've taken supplements. I would be a liar if I sat here and said I never took a supplement. I think we're all chasing quality and quantity of life. And I get that. Right. And I understand that. So I just want to just say right off the bat, I'm not coming from a place of judgment. Where I'm coming from is that the science just, it does not support the use of supplements unless you have a diagnosed deficiency. Or if you fall into certain subpopulations, like if you're pregnant or trying to get pregnant, then we know that you'll need, you know, folate or folic acid to prevent birth defects, right? And spina bifida and all that stuff. Or if you're 65 plus, we know that the body, you know, doesn't do a great job or as good of a job as it does when we're younger in absorbing nutrients. We know that, you know, older people can be deficient in certain nutrients. And I get that. But for the typical healthy, non-pregnant adult, supplements are just not necessary if you're eating a balanced diet. And so, Katie, I love what you said. You know, is it that I'm just putting my money through a shredder? I mean, kind of, in my opinion. You know, we're paying for really expensive urine because the percentage, the amount of nutrients that we're getting
excreted
in our supplements. Exactly, yeah. Dr. Lisa. It's just getting excreted in our urine. It's so much more than we'd ever need. Our bodies don't absorb or metabolize them. So literally it goes in, our body can't use it, and we're peeing it out. You know, but that being said, there are so many considerations. You know, how do you know if you have a deficiency? Mm-hmm. You know, that assumes that people have access to care, that you've been tested. But in most cases, if you do have a deficiency in a certain nutrient, it will manifest clinically, and then it would be picked up on. You know, you would be seeking medical care, and there would be a diagnosed deficiency. The other big thing, and I'm sorry, I'll shut up in just a second, is that supplements are not regulated. Yeah. And that's a very big issue for me. And it's so funny because I see a lot of people in the wellness space who have a lot to say about vaccines and how, you know, they're not, and I know I'm opening up a can of worms now,
but they'll
have supplements, but oh, the vaccines, I don't think the vaccines are safe. Why are people holding vaccines to a different standard than supplements, especially if they're taking supplements on a daily basis? Supplements are not, typically they're not tested, they're not regulated, and there have been studies done that look at the labels on supplements and then test the actual ingredients, and there's a real mismatch there between what's actually present and what's being disclosed on labels. Sometimes ingredients aren't disclosed, sometimes there are things that, you know, that people don't even know that they're ingesting. And the last thing I'll say is that a lot of times supplements have, you know, herbs or natural ingredients, and people will assume, oh, it's natural, it's it's herbal, it's organic, it's got to be safe. That is absolutely not an assumption that people should be making, because there can still be harm. There can be actually drug interactions with certain herbs, right, and even natural ingredients. And so I guess my point is that these supplements, they tend to be expensive. They tend to be unnecessary, assuming you have access to a balanced diet. And that's a whole other conversation, because I do understand that not everyone does have access to healthy foods on a regular basis. But then I'd say that the people who can afford supplements typically don't fall into that category, right? And then we're dealing with the Wild West of total lack of regulation. So we don't really know, are these things safe? Are they being labeled properly? And are they actually effective in achieving the things that people are saying they help us achieve, you know? So,
okay,
I'll stop.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
In the context of what we're talking about, the word supplements is a broad term, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when I hear you saying about vitamins and mineral deficiencies and being able to stall that through your daily Centrum Silver or whatever may be happening right there, it sounds like we're talking a lot about those different aspects. I'm curious about like more single ingredient supplements that have had a lot of press, for example, fish oil or vitamin D, or probiotics, or maybe certain types of proteins or something like that. So I don't know if you want to expand on something in that respect, and we could go from there.
Yeah. I mean, and there's each of those things, you know, there's a body of literature that I'd have to dive into. But, you know, for example, vitamin D, maybe there's some evidence. It's not robust evidence. It's not enough that would convince me that we should be supplementing with vitamin D. And especially if you don't have a diagnosed deficiency in vitamin D. The last thing you mentioned, oh, probiotics. Oh boy. So that's a whole other can of worms. The research on probiotics is quite mixed. There's actually some recent evidence that shows that probiotics might actually be harmful and can lead to homogeneity in the amount of probiotics that we have in our body. It could kind of mess with our microbiome and will interfere with the natural diversity of things that we've got swimming around in our gut. So because they're often like a particular strain of probiotic and that's what I'm getting at. So I guess, again, I'm not someone who's going to say like, it's silly for you to take these things, because there's not a whole lot of documented harm from taking them necessarily. Although, again, I want to give my little disclaimer, like, you know, there can be certain drug interactions, and we don't, we're not 100% confident in what these things contain. But it just doesn't seem like we need them, and they cost a lot of money, right? And so that's where I'm coming from. I'm just not really convinced by the body of evidence on vitamin D, on fish oil. I think, you know, if the evidence was really overwhelming, I would change my tune completely, but I just don't think we're there yet.
So I just want to clarify, because I feel like a way to maybe get... Is there a supplement that you have seen a body of research on that has made you compelled to take a supplement?
Yeah, that is a good question. I'd say there's some evidence that zinc, when taken early in the course of illness, may shorten the duration of illness and lessen the severity of illness. Again, the research is sort of like, it's not like super compelling, like I'm running out to get zinc. But again, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm not going to lie to you and say that if I feel a sniffle, a scratch in my throat, I don't sometimes reach for zinc. That being said, you could also overdose on zinc. It can upset your stomach. You know, there are other considerations. And so again, sorry, my little disclaimer, before you take anything, I think people just assume supplements are safe. It is still worth a conversation with your clinician just to understand like other meds that you're taking, your medical history, is it safe?
I think that's important. And people don't think about that part of it, like that these natural supplements can interfere with the drugs that we're prescribed by our doctors or the other natural supplements we're taking. You know, it's like the berries on the tree are natural, but that doesn't mean right. we go outside and eat them. So
right.
that's really important. I have a question around kind of what Tyler was saying with the single supplement support. If you are deficient, for example, I know that there were times in my life where I was deficient in vitamin D, and I did take a vitamin D supplement from a naturopathic doctor, you know, who seemed very legit and like everything was what it was supposed to be. And we did, after testing, you know, 6 months later, see a decent jump in my vitamin D levels. But then also what she had to remind me is like, you can have too much vitamin D. Mm-hmm. So she would pull down my dosage, like, you can't keep taking, mm-hmm. you got to take a break. So it's almost like this, you know, back and forth jump roping, watching like how high it's getting, how low it's getting, and supplementing in that way. Do you support that form of supplementation? Do you find that there are, I don't know, like Katie was saying, research to support specific supplements for those, like, you know, documented deficiencies?
I'm going to piggyback on that just so we can get hopefully also this other piece, mm-hmm. is that what I have noticed, I like this vitamin D conversation. What I have noticed is like, if I go to my primary care physician and they test my vitamin D, they're like, you're fine.
You're fine.
And then I go to my naturopath Same. And they're like, well, technically you're fine, but more optimal levels in our world are here.
Here. Yeah. 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 That's a good one.
So, okay, what I'm going to say right now might come off as controversial. Again, I'm not coming from a place of judgment, but I would not put naturopathy in the same category as, you know, MDs and DOs and other clinicians. I think we actually did a whole episode on naturopathy. You've done some posts on it. There are a lot of problems with naturopathy or naturopathy. I know people pronounce it differently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the tests that naturopaths use, these are not validated tests. Oftentimes they'll look at things in urine, for example, when really we can't use those for biomarkers. We should be using blood tests. I mean, there are a few different examples of that. So mm-hmm. I'm sorry if that's a controversial statement, but I am someone who does, you know, I certainly believe and support, I don't know what the right phrase is, conventional medicine. But that being said, I also understand the many limitations of our healthcare system. Like, I know I just tried to make an appointment with my PCP and they're like, oh yeah, we could see you in 6 to 8 months. Like, how is that going to help me now? You know? And so right. I understand why people are drawn to these alternatives. But Dr. Lisa, you asked another question. If someone is legitimately diagnosed with a deficiency using proper validated tests, absolutely, mm-hmm. they I think that supports supplementation. But I'd also say that we can get vitamin D and lots of other minerals and vitamins through mm-hmm. diet, and it's actually more affordable to do that, and it's better for us because things are more bioavailable when we get them through our diet, easier mm-hmm. to digest and for our bodies to absorb them. And so whenever possible, I would say, okay, if you're diagnosed with a legitimate deficiency, attempt to make dietary changes unless your clinician says it, you know, it warrants supplementation.
I think you're bringing up something real big here that I just want to say, which is, you know, if you're spending a lot of money on supplementation, you don't know if it's working for you, maybe take some of that money and put it towards some personalized clinical testing. And I know that's something that is definitely a privilege to be able to do, but and it makes me sad that more people can't do that. But it's I don't know if I'm saying what you're saying here, but like, if you can do that, then you can utilize things that you need. And otherwise, you can find out that you don't need anything and you can just relax and eat good food and enjoy your life.
We'll be back in just a moment.
If you've been a listener for a while, then you've heard us talk about WeShape. Well, right now, we're running a special promotion for new members where you can save 35% off any of our WeShape plans. This is a limited time offer, so click the link in our podcast description or go to weshape.com/35 to save 35% off any WeShape plan.
And now back to the Feeling Lighter podcast.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing on that
Please.
Note? I'm sorry to jump in.
I
think we are saying the same thing, except that I just want to caution. I think that there is a lot of marketing that's being done and making people feel like there are these direct-to-consumer tests or certain ways for us to monitor our health. And then I guess there's this term now, biohack our health based on results. And I just want to really caution against that, because again, a lot of the tests that are being marketed are not validated. They're not evidence-based. And so I think there are a lot of people out there, some, you know, I can't speak to everyone's intentions, but there is a very big market and industry for these types of tests. And a lot of times the tests will identify deficiencies, and then surprise, that same company is selling you a supplement. So just would caution. Yeah, surprise, surprise. Exactly. So I would just caution against that.
Would you say the gold standard for any of this is like blood testing through your medical provider, like ideally?
I would say so. And it depends on what is exactly being tested for.
Right.
But I think a lot of times, like, people are claiming, oh, there are urine tests or saliva tests, and those tests are not validated. And so again, recognizing all the problems with our healthcare system, I do still have to give a plug for conventional medicine, you know, MDs, DOs, PAs, NPs, because the way that that's being practiced is supported by the best available evidence. So, and again, really want to underscore that I totally understand. And just as a total aside, my father, who has since passed away, he battled COPD for many years. And then later in life, he had bladder cancer. And I remember seeing him struggle so much and feeling like the conventional medical system was not always giving him the answers he wanted, especially, you know, as treatments were failing. And oftentimes he was like considering these alternatives. And I understand. I personally have not been someone who has suffered chronically or dealt with a diagnosis like cancer. But I understand why people seek out these alternatives. But I just want to caution against them, because oftentimes people are being given misdiagnoses and improper treatment, and then we're missing actual diagnoses and we're missing out on actual treatments that are evidence-based and can help. So I don't know.
This is where it gets a little complicated. Like, for instance, with like what's really popular right now is like mushroom supplements, right? Mm-hmm. And people will argue, well, we're on the cutting edge, so the research hasn't caught up to what we are doing. So this is harmless. It's not going to have a negative impact. So just join us in this movement because we're on the cutting edge and the research hasn't caught up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, these are situations where I'm like, I don't know how to make decisions.
Yeah. Well, so if there's no research, then how do we know it's safe is what I'd say. So it is possible, like something like that. And I just, truth be told, I'm not up on the mushroom literature, but it is possible. Maybe we will learn like these things are having an amazing effect. And that's great. But there is money. And when people say that there isn't money to do research, this industry, it's a multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar industry. There is money to do research. And I guess, you know, I'm uncomfortable making, you know, any statement about it until we have the research. And the research is possible. So that's what I'd say. Like, I'm not saying don't take mushrooms, but just as we don't know if there is or isn't benefit, we also don't know if these things are safe necessarily. So I'm not jumping into any of these trends until I see more data.
And then, it also gets complicated because, like, for instance, I've worked with a couple MDs who are referring supplements. So I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So this is going to lead me to my next question, and I hope it's not too controversial. But okay, so we are presented with information. We are interested in potentially perceive like going down a path. I want to try some fish oil. I'm having some joint stuff. I've been hearing that this is really beneficial. What lens and filter can I look through so that I know I'm making a good choice? And the controversial question I'm going to ask is, I mean, can we actually trust the FDA? Is that a gold standard for? I don't know how to make decisions. I hear, I literally have some MDs and naturopaths telling me this is an incredible solution to this problem that you're facing. The FDA is not approving it, so then I'm like, well, who's right? Who's wrong? How do I know the FDA isn't it for money? How do I? It's like, I'm stuck.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpack there. Let's start with, what was the first part of your question? You were saying, oh, some MDs have recommended supplements. Yeah. So I'd say, first of all, if your MD, you know, is recommending something to you, they're familiar with your medical history, it's unlikely that taking that supplement is going to be harmful, as long as you're not taking it in lieu of other treatments, right? And if that's the case, if you're forgoing some other evidence-based treatment for something, then it warrants a second opinion. The next thing I'd say is that we as individuals, we're humans and we make mistakes. And I also want to distinguish between clinicians and scientists. And this is not to disparage clinicians. My husband is an emergency physician. I have the utmost respect in the world for MDs. But he'll be the first to tell you, like, you know, what does he really know about research design and biostatistics and how to really dig into research studies, right? And they do their best to keep up with the latest and greatest research, but clinicians are primarily, you know, trained to diagnose and treat. They're not trained in the scientific, like really critically appraising scientific research. So that's just one other thing I want to say.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
Mm-hmm. It's an important distinction, thank you.
Because we just assume, I think. We just assume. Yes, the credential means that they know, yeah.
Correct. And the other thing is that, you know, individuals, maybe they're overlooking the latest and greatest research. Maybe they're not up to date on it. Maybe in that interaction, they see a patient who is struggling and wants answers and feels frustrated. And maybe based on their medical history, taking fish oil is not going to be harmful. So if that makes them feel better to try it, maybe that's what makes sense, right? So yeah. It really depends on that context. I'm going to go off on two quick tangents, if that's okay.
Sure.
One is, so recently, and I've been vocally critical about a recent statement put out by the American Academy of Pediatrics. This is a clinical professional organization that many people turn to and trust. But they put out a policy statement that was authored by three pediatricians, and it was about GMOs, genetically modified organisms, and like basically raised some concerns, cautioned parents about feeding their kids GMO foods with GMO ingredients, and there were lots of concerns in their policy piece about glyphosate and pesticides. Now the opinion of these three pediatricians completely contradicts decades of scientific evidence and the scientific consensus on this topic, which is that absolutely not, GMOs are not harmful. We need to be focusing on kids eating more fruits and veggies, period, regardless of whether or not they're organic, they're conventional, they have GMOs, whatever it is. That needs to be the focus. And so I guess I'm just bringing up this example to highlight, like, individuals can sometimes get it wrong, and then it poses a real problem. Like, who does the public turn to, right? Because you have this professional organization that you trust, and they're coming out with something that goes against scientific evidence. So this is really, it just underscores the power of scientific consensus. And I don't know, there's no easy answer to this. I mean, it just really frustrated so many of us in the science world, because it was counter to decades of evidence. And I could go on and on about like pesticides and all that stuff.
A question about yes. that I think is important. So like, yeah. How do we know that the people who are producing the evidence that GMOs and pesticides are not harmful is not actually being funded by the companies that are profiting from that?
Right.
So everyone, just to be like totally transparent, like everything is an industry. Everything is for profit. Like there's money on I don't want to say on both sides of the issue, but like, you know, you have, of course, the industry themselves, they're doing their own research, but then you also have academics, independent scientists, the FDA, government entities that are, and I know we're going to talk about the FDA, that do so many levels of rigorous testing, from preclinical to clinical to monitoring real world evidence. Like, there are so many eyes looking at the foods that we consume for safety. And then on the other side, I mean, there is a very vocal organic lobby. There's the Environmental Working Group, which I know many people turn to, but unfortunately, and I'm not a fan of the EWG because the large majority of what they're putting out is not based in science. For example, they will spread a lot of fear about conventional produce. I'm sure you've heard of the Dirty Dozen, failing to acknowledge that organic produce also has pesticides, that pesticides, yeah, if you're doing a preclinical study in rats and exposing a rat to 1,000% times the pesticides that we'd ever be exposed to as humans, the rat is going to develop cancer. Because if you expose a rat to enough of a substance, it's going to get cancer, right? But we don't have the human data that shows that, you know, and things are taken out of context and the dose makes the poison. I mean, there's so much I could talk about here.
Yeah.
Moving on, if I could, to the FDA. FDA, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's a perfect organization. I think there's been a lot of, you know, mishandling of things, like the opioid crisis comes to mind. And then, like, just as an example, there was recently, I don't know if you all saw this, but a lot of fuss about phenylephrine, which has been on the shelves for decades. It's a nasal decongestant. Mm-hmm. And the FDA just came out and said, hey, we just looked at the evidence and actually it's not effective. It doesn't actually work as a nasal decongestant. So a lot of people are sitting there like, how did the FDA let this fly? For 30 years it's been on the shelves and now you're telling me it doesn't work? And the answer is that the FDA focuses on safety. So from a safety perspective, phenylephrine is safe when used as advised, as recommended. But now they're catching up on the effectiveness data, on the efficacy data, and that's why they've pulled back on this product. So again, am I going to sit here and say the FDA is perfect? Absolutely not. However, people should know how much red tape there is, how many rigorous studies are being conducted at every level of the, you know, food production and drugs and medications. And this is, right now, it's the best thing we have. This is our regulatory agency, you know? And so who do we trust if not the agency that is employed to protect us? So I don't know. That was a lot. I'm sorry.
What I hear you saying is that oftentimes we have a lot of people making like very complex conclusions, like things that take very complex working pieces and coming up with very simplified solutions. Mm-hmm. So to come in and say like, this is the best thing for your health is like a very simplified black and white way of doing something, but really there's like a tremendous amount of complexity that can go into such a conclusion. Is that what
Katie,
I hear you saying?
You just absolutely nailed it. And I think it's comforting to people, those all or none statements. They're easy, they're sexy. It makes us feel like we have control. Oh, if I eat this, if I take this supplement, I'm going to take control of my health. I'll be healthy. If I avoid this, I'm protecting my kids. I'm reducing their risk of cancer and all these other terrible outcomes. But the reality is so much more nuanced and gray, and it's not as sexy to say, hey, cancer is multifactorial. It's, you know, a combination of genetic factors, behavioral factors, environmental factors that also interact with each other. You know, it's like, that's the truth of it. But yeah. People don't, what do you do with that? You know, there's not like a tangible, concrete takeaway.
Yeah. So I'm going to move into another topic that I think is really important.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I'm fascinated with is like things that our FDA approves that like other countries don't approve. So things like, so I'm like, then that's an argument, right? I'm taking all of the wellness arguments here. So for instance, I find it fascinating around food dyes, like red dye 40. But California is now outlawing red dye 40. And I'm like, okay. How do I know that this would, like, help me with red dye 40? This is actually a huge, you know, in the wellness space, I have a neurodivergent child, and any neurodivergence combined with red 40 is a recipe for disaster. And then I'm like, okay, well, maybe I can question that belief. And then the state of California is like, we're actually outlawing that. And then, like, in Europe, they don't have it. And it's like, okay, where do I go?
So let's talk about it. And there's a lot I could say about this. And I think we need like six more hours. So, okay. No, but I'd say
I'm
that a
to
lot
simplify
of
simplify all of your science no. in 35 minutes. Yeah.
Yes, no, I love it. So many of the things that are seemingly banned in other countries are not actually banned. It's just a matter of having them be labeled differently. And so if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's the case with this particular dye. I don't believe it's actually banned in other countries. I think it's called something else. But please don't quote me on that. I'll have to confirm that. Okay. The next thing I'd caution against is, yeah, California is trying to pass this policy. These are politicians making these decisions based on what they think their constituents will want them to do and what will get them reelected. It does not mean that they're always following the science. So if there's enough fuss about a particular dye or color or additive or whatever it is, that's going to get a politician's attention. That's an easy way to get people to support them, right? But it does not, that should not be used as evidence. The other thing I'd say is that in the US, we take something called a risk-based approach, whereas other places like Europe and the UK, they take something called a hazard-based approach. So a hazard-based approach, basically, you're looking at a substance's potential for risk. And I personally can't wrap my mind around this because everything has the potential for risk. It just depends on the dosage, right? Whereas in the US, we take a risk-based approach, which keeps in mind the our likelihood of exposure. So, okay, this thing could be harmful, but how much of it would we need to be exposed to and how much of it are we typically exposed to? And then that's how we calculate whether or not something's safe. And so just using the example of aspartame, right? That was a common thing, artificial sweetener aspartame. There was one working group at the World Health Organization that deemed aspartame is a possible carcinogen. Okay, this got a ton of press. Everyone's freaking out because we all love our Diet Cokes and it's like, oh my God, do I have to stop drinking it? First of all, fail to acknowledge that the actual, the working group at the World Health Organization that is tasked with this, they did not make the same statement. Okay, that's first of all. Second of all, they took a hazard-based approach, which means that, yeah, aspartame has the potential for harm. Right? When you dig in deeper, okay, I'd need to drink 20 cans of Diet Coke every day for the rest of my life to even meet the minimum threshold for potential risk. And the last thing I'd say is that aspartame was put in the same risk category as aloe vera and pickled vegetables. So I'm saying these things to underscore, like, that context matters. Like, you know, yeah, aspartame, could it cause cancer? Absolutely. But not in any real, like, we're never going to consume enough Diet Coke to actually meet the threshold for risk, right? And we can see the same thing.
When they came out saying, like, they, can I call out something that you told me one time?
Again. on the spot.
You have no choice.
You're here. We can edit it out if you don't like it. One time you told me, like, oh, they've done autopsies and found aspartame in people's spinal columns, and it's so hazardous and dangerous. And I remember I, like,
Google it. You'll find evidence for that. Just like you'll find evidence for anything you want to find.
Yes, but, like, will. I feel like I owe my dad an apology because he loved his Diet Coke, and he went off of Diet Coke after I badgered him for that afterwards. So sorry,
you can go
Pops.
Buy him a Diet Coke.
I'm going to buy you a Diet Coke after this. But
can I ask a question real quick? I have one that I'm really curious about. Hydrogenated oils, trans fats. Have you done any research into this and what the impact that has on people?
We can only cook with coconut oil, Dr. Jess.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't know. So, and I don't know if you're maybe talking about seed oils in particular. I know that's gotten a lot of press. Seed oils, I do not know. Seed oils need a new PR person. Because holy crap, it's all based on this linoleic acid, which people says causes inflammation. No, there is no evidence of this. This is not a thing. I don't even know how to debunk it. Like, there's just no evidence of it. There's no reason to avoid seed oils. I cook with seed oils all the time. So I don't know. I mean, that's a short answer. That's a debunk right there. And if you want more info, because I'm sure there are people listening to this and they'll be like, oh, no. I saw the evidence. I saw the studies. So I'm going to get ahead of that and say two things. One, if you search for a study on a topic, you're going to find it, right? Because there's been stuff published. It just doesn't mean just because it's been published that it's credible or that it had, you know, that we need to alter our behaviors because of it. Second of all, even if you see it on PubMed, that holds true because PubMed is just a repository for research. So if it's been published, you're going to find it on PubMed. And actually, we did not, I guess, a shameless plug. We did do a deep dive in a podcast and a post on our page on seed oils. If people do have more questions, showing you the actual, like, best available research on this topic that shows, no, it does not lead to chronic inflammation. It doesn't, I think people say it causes heart disease, diabetes. There's just no evidence of that.
Okay. I mean, inflammation is another buzzword.
It is.
Oh, God. Yeah. Everything causes, I mean,
inflammation. Sorry. We all have inflammation.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
Exactly.
Our team is giving me a time and I'm like, no, I can't end this. I have 30,000 more questions. I think the takeaway, and I also want to be sure that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Like sometimes I do this where I'm like, great, everything I ever believed, I'm just going to eat like
maybe Diet Coke and candy bars.
All day. Yeah. And so I want to make sure we're also not saying that. I mean, are we not? We're also not saying that.
Right.
No, of course not. Everything in moderation. Like, you know, there's take processed foods. You know, processed foods, are they in and of themselves harmful? I would argue that the evidence doesn't show me that processed foods, in and of themselves are harmful. However, if the majority of our diet is comprised of processed foods, that's a problem, right? So everything in moderation. So no, I'm not saying go out and drink 100 cans of Diet Coke. I guess I just push back against this fear culture where we're terrified of everything we're putting in our bodies. And the reality is that there are very few things in this world that if we consume them in moderation are going to have any major impact on our health. It's just,
like,
that's just not how it works.
That is probably going to have a greater
impact.
Exactly. And it's leading to so much health anxiety, food anxiety, and honestly, disordered eating. And so we have to think about those other byproducts of this type of messaging.
Okay. Ooh. Before we let you go, because my team's going to cut me off here, because we have another guest right after, but we have to ask the big Feeling Lighter podcast question before we let you leave, which is, what is a belief that you once had that you no longer have that has shifted your life in a big way? Is there something? It could be anything, Dr. Jess. It could be anything.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Is there that you used to believe and you're like, I don't really believe that anymore and it's impacted me?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was a person I'm a public health person, right? And so there's a lot of vilification of things like sugar and salt and all these things. And I think I took a very hard stance on these things. And, I remember, with my dad and even now still with my mom, I'm like you said, don't eat this, don't drink this, and it's because I want them, of course, to be healthy and live as long as possible. But like I said, and I'm sorry, I feel like this is a boring answer. It's just like, life is short. we can't obsess over every little thing we're doing or eating. Just, practice common sense, eat things in moderation, try to move your body, reduce your stress whenever possible, eat a nutritious diet, but don't freak out if you want to have, a sleeve of Oreos every now and then because you're having a bad day and it's going to help with your mental and emotional well-being, So I guess my answer is I take a less black and white hard stance on a lot of topics now.
I love how you went for the whole sleeve.
Yeah.
Sleeve.
The caveat is people are like, it's okay to have a cookie
one
or two.
Oreo.
It's like, shut up. Like,
shut up.
Sleeve.
But I will have like four. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for that.
Yes. Well, before we let you go, where can people find you?
Thank you so much. Really, this was such an amazing conversation. So you can follow along on social media at Unbiased SciPod, Instagram, Facebook, all the places. And we also have a weekly podcast that airs on Apple, Spotify, all the places. And that's Unbiased Science Podcast.
I just want to thank you because you have helped me live in less fear. So I really, that has saved years of my life versus the sleeve of Oreos, right? So I appreciate that. Anytime I'm like, oh my God, this thing, I can just go to your Instagram and you'll have done an article on it. So really appreciate the work that you do. And thank you so much for giving us such scientifically sound answers. And just what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's show. Now, before you go, it would mean a lot to us if you could take a moment right now to subscribe to the podcast and then leave us a review. This helps spread the word so more people can feel lighter by shedding one belief at a time. Also, we want to hear from you. So if this episode impacted you or you have any questions that you think would be great for us or any of our future guests, please feel free to email us at podcast@weshape.com. And finally, if you want to try WeShape's different approach to health and fitness, remember that right now we're running a special promotion for new members where you can save 35% off of any of our WeShape plans. This is a limited time offer, so click the link in our podcast description or go to weshape.com/35 for 35% off any WeShape plan.